Okay.
Hey, Beth.
Hi there.
It's Diane.
Hi, Diane. How are you?
How are you today? I'm good. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Am I the first one on?
You are the first one on.
Oh, wow. I thought I was late. Oh, good. I'm not late. All right. I'm going to mute you and finish doing what I was doing.
Okay. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, is this Diane?
It is Diane. How are you today?
I'm okay. And you guys? I tried to be on time today.
You were on time today. You rocked. You're exactly, my clock says 12 o'clock straight up. Good for you.
Well, I'm on time, but I'm barely prepared, but I'm looking forward to the hour.
I'm with you, Catherine.
Well, so you guys are on time, so you get to, you know, I promised last time that I would start on time so that everybody who wanted to check in would have a chance to check in. You know, I'm curious how things went for you the last couple weeks.
Oh,
are we all on?
I'm having, oh. I think it might just be the two of us so far.
Yeah, but it's the two of you, but I told everybody that I was going to start on time this week, so I'm going to let you check in before everybody else. I'm sure by 5 after we'll have everybody, and by the time, you know, people will come in and check in.
Who's the other person?
So I got Beth, and I have and I have Catherine.
Okay, Beth, because I'm, you know what, I'm looking on Facebook, too. I'm trying to get people's names connected with what they've said and their kids and...
I'm the one who had the meltdown with my kids the other night and wrote a post about it.
The 15-year-old son, and I've got the 15-year-old son.
Right. I think we have a lot in common, Catherine.
Is yours Zachary? Who else? The other Zachary. Yours isn't Zachary.
Mine's Michael.
Somebody else
Michael.
Had a Zachary, and I've got a Zachary. Michael.
You're 15.
Yes. I'm looking at your post from the 5th about the obnoxious behavior to the...
Yeah, you know.
Man,
just,
the relationship, sibling relationship is killing you. Excuse me, go Diane. Sorry, I just...
Yeah, I know. So Kathy just joined us. I want to kind of keep us on track. So I appreciate, and you guys have had this great dialogue, and Kathy's been part of the dialogue as well, and she just joined us as well. So I want to save some time to focus in on that if that's what we want to focus in on, but I want to just give everybody a chance to kind of chime in and see generally how things are going. So if you could just kind of give a one-minute overview of how things have been going. I know you made some posts. If you've tried to do some things since you posted, you know, how are things going since then, and where are you at? And Catherine, you want to start since you were kind of going for it?
Oh, okay. Summary. I had said I was going to work on getting Zachary to talk about and come up with a way to figure out what are his assignments, you know, this kind of thing. Try to figure out a structure. Let's try for the planner. And we had a few tiny conversations, and we had one or two days where he actually was a little bit cooperative, but it kind of went by the wayside. The good news is I made some good emails to the teachers this week, finally. I had a good talk with his guidance counselor. I had a talk with one of the assistant principals and have scheduled a 504 meeting. One of his teachers said back in an email, does he have a 504 in place? And I said, no, but people have mentioned it over the years. And I figured I at least needed to investigate it. So I've got that set up for November 4th. So I feel like I've done something. And I've gotten some good emails back from the teachers. And I feel like I've started some good communication with the teachers and made a step in this direction. So we didn't get the planner thing worked on, but I feel like I did get something done. Now,
And the reality is that once you've kind of got that structure and you've got that engagement of the teachers, it's going to make your experience in setting up the structure with the planner and everything else different, because you're going to know what relationship is sitting on the other side of the table. You're not going to be wondering about how engaged or not engaged the teachers are. You're going to have a clearer sense of, you know, what they can do, what they can't do, how they're going to work with you, that sort of thing. So it sounds like it's a great step.
Yeah, so I'm happy about that. I will say, just in one sentence, I went and looked at the PowerPoint of the guy that did the digital distraction thing just yesterday.
Yeah.
And that was so right on. So many of us talked on the Facebook about the, you know, the gaming and the Minecraft and the timing and all that. And that, I think everybody just totally identified with that. And we had a big bad last night to do with internet chat and things like that. So we're kind of in a bad way there, but I'm done. We've got the 504 meeting scheduled, and we made progress in that area. So,
well, and maybe we'll talk about internet, because I locked down Facebook and I don't even know what else last night at my house too. So I think it's something in the atmosphere about the internet this week that we'll focus in on. Beth, what's been going on for you?
Oh, you know, I'm in a lot of the same boat as Catherine in a lot of ways. I also met with the guidance counselor, and we do have his IEP meeting lined up for next week. So that'll be that's a really good timing. This is an annual review. You know, I'm still really struggling with getting him on board with doing the things that you know I feel like he needs to do. From, you know, again, just routines in the house. To, you know, he does his homework. He does the absolute bare minimum. He doesn't study. He doesn't plan ahead and say, it's in three days, so maybe I should start studying tonight. And when I talk to him about that, it almost always becomes, you know, a battle and a, why, you know, I'm doing fine. Why do I have to, why do I, you know, leave me alone kind of thing, you know? And doesn't, you know, he has all these websites at his fingertips. You know, they put notes from the class up on a website. And he just practically refuses to go and look at it and study the material. And I'm in a frustrated place these days with him, just because, you know, between the attitude. I mean, for the most part, he's such a good kid, but we have moments where he can just make me crazy, and it gets negative. And anyway, so I'm kind of in a frustrated. But I'm just looking for some ideas for actually what to do. You know, when you're in the heat of the moment, how to, like, a concrete, some concrete ideas of what to do.
Yeah, I can hear the frustration, and what I would say is that, you know, the number one thing in that moment is to find ways to stay as calm as you can. And,
right.
You know, so it's, you know, whether it's taking a time out, taking a few deep breaths, taking a sip of water, you know, whatever you need to do, because it's so easy to let that frustration take over, and you know that it's not going to help, but it doesn't change the fact that you're frustrated, and you have every right to be frustrated because it's a difficult situation to be in. It just doesn't make logical sense.
Right.
I'm curious, Beth, when you thought about the shifting expectations and more of that kind of disability perspective, how does that play into the conversation around the homework and the planning and that sort of thing?
I guess maybe I haven't made the shift completely, because a lot of times I feel like the issues he has are not related to his disability. Honestly, I'm not 100% convinced that it's because of his ADD. I think a lot of it is he has a fear, maybe it's a fear of failure or a fear of doing anything that he finds difficult. If it's something that's difficult, he just shies away from it. And I'm practically...
Yeah, you know, of course.
And, I guess that's part of it. But it's also, it's a personality trait. And it's frustrating because, you know, my husband's not that way. I'm not that way. My other kids aren't that way. And I know he has so much potential, but he just... You know, hard work is just an anathema to him.
I could say all that about Zachary. Exact same paragraph.
You know,
well,
granted,
and I think
you know,
that we
teachers say he works so hard at school, it's so difficult. I know it is, he, you know, it's an uphill battle for him all day at school, and I do appreciate that, and I sympathize for with him. But I'm not asking him to do 3 hours of homework a night. You know, a couple hours, and just kind of show more, more, so that he cares more. You know, that he cares about succeeding, because I feel like he just thinks he can't succeed academically, so why bother, or he doesn't care. I don't know which it is.
Well, so let's take it both directions for just a second, and if everybody will let me kind of play with this one, is that okay with everybody? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take it both directions. So what if it's fear of failure?
Okay.
What would he need? What support would he need from you if it was fear of failure?
I think he needs to understand that I'm not looking for ultimate success. I'm looking for effort. I don't know. I think there's a difference between effort and, you know, winning or success. You know?
Right.
I'm not so concerned about the final outcome. I'm not concerned about the grade. I'm concerned about showing the effort and doing the best that he's capable of doing. I don't think
he does
the best that he's capable of doing.
Okay, so if you were going to set up a system that rewarded progress rather than outcome, which is one of the great foundational principles, what would that look like?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Well, and so I think that this is a lot of times what happens is that we get caught up in this, in the moment of it, but it's, you know, it's turning it upside down and being willing to say, okay, let's really reward progress. Let's set a timer for 20 minutes and let them work like crazy for 20 minutes. And if he works great for 20 minutes, then do a happy dance, do some kind of celebration, do some kind of motivating sort of thing to keep that progress moving. Because I think you're right on track with the whole rewarding the effort rather than the outcome on this one.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I guess it comes back to he does do his work. He does the homework. He does spend the time to get the work done. Is it very thorough? Is it very well thought out? Not necessarily. But does he do anything in addition to that? Does he plan and say, again, like I said earlier, I have a test on, he has a big test on Friday, and he's like, I know the material. He has a website available to him with the class notes. And, you know, I guess it's hard for me to pull myself out of myself. I mean, if I were a student, when I was a student, if I had that available to me, oh, my gosh, I'd be all over it. But he isn't me.
Right.
I that's another thing. I need to accept that he's not me. He's a boy, for one thing, and that's just not his personality. But,
well, and I guess
maybe it's too much for me to ask.
Well, and I guess I want to go back to that because you said, you know, you don't know whether all of it is ADHD. And I'm a firm believer that their ADHD impacts every aspect of their life. And the fact that every other parent of a 15-year-old boy who has ADHD that I've talked to has the same challenge makes me believe, and I'm not a scientist, I'm not a researcher, but I believe that it is the ADHD. It's a challenge of executive function. And so if that's the case, how does that help you figure out where to go with solutions?
I don't know, Diane. I really don't know. Can you tell me?
I don't know what anybody else, does anybody else want to jump in here? Because I think that this is the key thing, is the looking at the disability and supporting the disability as opposed to being able to put aside the frustration. Because the frustration is very real and very an important part of what we're challenged with. But if we can put that to the side and say, what support does this child with a disability need?
Well,
and just take it from that angle.
One thing I've thought of doing is he has a teacher in the learning center. He goes to the learning center every day. And if his teacher were the one, if his learning center teacher, who he really likes and is also a special educator, she said to him, Michael, your job each night is to go onto the website for, you know, X number of classes. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's each night it's a different class. And write five main points down from that day's class notes, and show it to me in the morning. He would do it. So maybe,
so
maybe that's what I need to talk to her about. How it needs to be assigned by the teacher, as opposed to me saying, "Michael," you know, that's all he hears when I say it. But if a teacher said it, and she followed up and said, "Okay, where are your five main points? Where are your five flashcards?" However, you know, he wants to, you know, structure it. I think maybe he would do it. That's an idea.
Well, and that's a great
have it come from the teacher as opposed to from me.
Well, and that's a good aha as well, because the reality is that even if it's a disability, the reality is that the family dynamics, the personalities always do get in the way. And so there's all these layers here. And so you're figuring out, how do I poke, where do I press, that sort of thing. But I think that I would encourage all of you, you know, especially because that was the topic last week, is to really focus in on, you know, not the question of, is it something else? You know, because, yeah, probably it is. They're all teenagers, or they're all emerging teenagers. And so there is, you know, puberty going on. There is, you know, independence going on. There's all this other stuff going on. But inside, underneath all of it, is a kid who has ADHD, who has challenges from a neurobiological challenge standpoint. And so starting from that place and saying, okay, how can I support that? And then figuring out all the other stuff, all the personalities and the family dynamics and all that other stuff. Sometimes if you just can keep the light shining on that one piece of it, it can help you to stay focused enough to let go of some of the other stuff and keep moving forward. And it's really frustrating and challenging. I don't want to diminish what you're going through, but it's a difficult thing to be in. So I want to jump back out because I saw several other people joining. I just want to let everybody know I know you're here. I see, so now we have Beth and Catherine and Kathy and Liz and Noe and somebody else who joined us just a minute ago. Who else did I miss?
Karen.
Oh, Karen, hey. Great. Okay, so I want to just let one or two others of you do a quick check-in. Let me know how things have been going with shifting expectations since the last time we talked. Anybody want to jump in?
I don't mind jumping in. Kathy.
Oh. Hey, Kathy.
Hi. I have to just say that I am really optimistic. I've had like a doozy of a week, and kind of it's culminating in this real optimism, because when you said thinking about every aspect of my daughter's life being impacted by her ADHD, I think it's finally getting to me. And I think, you know, kind of a turning point was me. I posted that I cried this weekend, and it kind of shocked me that I, like, cried. And it sort of was a whole other piece that had nothing to do with her. It was like my crap that I need to deal with. And it was like, look at this. I've got some stuff that's surfacing. But it's not her crap. It's my crap. But her stuff is sort of picking it up. And, you know, working with her in school, this whole internet stuff, and now starting to talk about her ADHD, it's like, this is where we need to be right now. We sort of had a talk last night about her ADHD, and it's really kind of surprising to me how much she doesn't understand how this is impacting her life. You know, I sort of use that whole analogy of the train going really, really fast, and that's her brain that works so fast and so fast, but things are going by her, and she's not grabbing all of them, and then the deer comes by, and she looks at the deer and everything else derails. And she was like, I don't know what you're talking about. But it was good she could tell me she didn't understand, because she really does not understand what is happening with her. Yet she could say, oh, I'm having so much trouble with friends. She has no idea how her neurobiology is impacting that. And it was really an aha for me. And I said, you know, we're going to keep having this conversation probably for a good year now. And I don't expect you to get it, probably for a good year now. But let's just keep talking about it. And it's a huge turning point for me. So I think that a couple things happened there, that it's like separating what's my stuff and what she needs from me is like a huge thing for me right now.
Yeah, well, and so there's two pieces of that. One is that recognition, Kathy, and then the other piece is the great work you're doing to begin educating your daughter on her ADHD. And you've done a lot to get your own awareness up, and you're still learning, but it sounds like you're finding that, you know, beginning this conversation with her is going to be another tool that you have for helping her awareness, her, you know, her interaction with you, her, you know, it'll help her ability to begin to become more independent and to manage herself, that the more she realizes what's going on with her.
Yeah, that's really true. And it's the ignorance of her, and I mean that in a kind way. Like at dinner, I said, could you tell Dad what we talked about as far as ADHD and how it sort of takes over at times? And she's like, you know, to tell you the truth, there was a squirrel on the patio, and I missed a lot of what you said. And I was all over congratulating her for telling us that. Because usually she would just make up some, you know, she'd kind of blow it out, whatever. And I was like, wow, it's so good that you noticed that that's what prevented you from talking to me. And it just, I don't know. It's a whole new way of looking at this. So thank you. Because you really led me to this on our last discussion. And yikes.
Great. Great. Well, thank you for sharing that, Kathy. Anybody else want to do a quick check-in? We'll get time for one more quick check-in before we jump into our topic. Nobody?
This is Liz. I'll jump in. I really appreciated your talking about bringing the awareness up, both with our child and family-wide, how the ADHD affects her. And a lot of what we've been discussing on Facebook since the meeting has been really helpful. I believe you added in a post about becoming a team and supporting each other. And I thought that was such a good analogy. And I also appreciated another post about family blow-ups over the weekend and how we responded to those and finding better ways to respond. And there was another post about how our child's anxiety plays into the whole scenario. And I thought that was really important to discuss also.
Great. Well, it sounds like people are getting a lot out of what the discussion on Facebook, and really have been grateful. Elaine and I both have been really grateful that people have been actively participating and sharing their own stories. Would encourage you, you know, if you have a specific question, you guys have been doing a really good job of tagging Elaine and I so that we know specifically, because a lot of times part of what this is about is letting you respond to each other, but then part of it is saying, okay, people want, you know, it's time to kind of wrap up the conversation and make an observation as the observer role that we sometimes play. And so you guys have been doing a really great job of sharing, and hopefully you've been getting good value out of that as well. Thanks, Liz, for telling us which ones particularly spoke to you. What have you been doing differently since the last time we talked?
I think taking a step back from conflicts when they occur and trying to keep the ADHD in the back of my mind, how it's playing into the conflict, and trying not to let my frustration turn it into something negative, to try to be the calm in the storm.
Great. Great. And what's been working the best for you?
I think giving myself time out and also talking to the other family members to remind them to factor in the ADHD each time we're having an issue going on, to step back and remember that and not react.
Yeah. The other thing I've been talking to folks a lot, and since you know, staying calm has been a kind of underlying current and always is about having some kind of house rule about, you know, tempers. You know, it's like, what do you do? And I noticed in my house, I do better with one of my child. I have a 12-year-old, almost 13, and a 14-year-old. And I do much better with one of them than I do with the other in terms of their tempers. And, you know, so it, one of them I'm like going toe-to-toe with. The other one I'm like, okay, wait, we need to take some space and come back and have this conversation. And so it's about, you know, if you have a rule, if you have a guideline that says, okay, if one of you, one of us, any one of us is really upset, let's take a few minutes and calm down and not try to have the conversation in the midst of the intensity. Because the reality is that it doesn't work very well. You know, we don't, when we're really upset and we're really kind of crazy, we don't have access to the full problem-solving part of our brain. And so that's true for us. It's true for our kids. And we're going to talk about brain health in a minute. But it's really important to do it in a way that calmness becomes the most important thing. And it's hard because you want to fix the problem. I don't know about you, but I'm a problem fixer. And so when it's like, oh, my gosh, what do you mean you got a D on this or this isn't turned in or whatever else, you know, you get really frantic and focused on the fixing, but you do it from this place of frenetic craziness that really is less of a problem-solving, compassionate focus. And so I would encourage all of you to, you know, to create some kind of code, some kind of agreement with your kids that, you know, if anybody's upset, because your kids can be a great help with this. If you're over the deep end, your kids will go, Mom, do you need a timeout? You know, but have this agreement between you that says, we're not going to finish this conversation until everybody's calm. It can really help. Okay.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on that?
Well, this is Catherine. I've tried to do that in the car where I'll say, you know, we're all upset or whatever. Okay, let's just stop. We're not going to talk. We're going to listen to music. Let's just stop, all of us, for all our sakes. But Zachary cannot stand it. He wants to keep engaging. And the thing to do is I just drive silently. And usually it eventually works, but then he will accuse me of not answering him or not talking to him or ignoring him. But I've already said, look, we're just not going to talk about it now. But it takes him a while to disengage. He wants to try to keep it going.
Oh, yeah, and then they pull you back in. It's really easy to do, and it's hard to sit there. You almost have to bite your tongue and just kind of go, no, I'm not going to answer you. I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to take the bait. I think Elaine actually wrote a blog called Take the Bait. If you go out and search for it, I can send it to somebody if they want me to. It's difficult.
Somebody said on one of the posts, I think it was last night, we got to remind ourselves we have two ears and one mouth. I'm like, that's right. We should be listening more. Shut our mouth. It would it would help us, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's great. So, great. Well, so I'm going to jump in and start our topic. Hopefully everybody got the workbook. We're so excited that we finished the whole workbook. And so you have everything, and you can read ahead, but, you know, try to make sure you're keeping up with the topics that we're working on. But I know those of you who are overachievers, and I know exactly who you are, will have read the whole book by the next time we get together. So you have it. Did anybody not get the workbook?
I probably got the workbook, but I'm not sure. Is it in an email?
Yeah. So it would have been.
One of the overachievers.
There you go, Kathy. No, it's it was attached to the Monday morning email, and it's in PDF form, so you can download it, you can put it on your computer, you can print it out, whatever you want to do. And
And the reason we did it in PDF form this year is because we want to, it's a working document. We want to get your feedback, what you like, what you don't. So help us as we go through this version of it and make it even better for the next group that's going to go through. So thank you for that in advance. Okay, so this week is the second critical response area. Last week we talked about shifting expectations, and there's four. There's shifting expectations, there's activating the brain, there's parenting positively, and there's systems and structures. And those are the kind of four foundations of what we say are the best ways to support our kids and the challenge in the challenges that are going on in our houses. And remember, it's, you know, there's the six challenge areas, whether you're dealing with homework or whether you're dealing with getting your kid out of bed in the morning, or if you're dealing with, you know, a meltdown, or if you're dealing with challenges in your relationship. If you can start with these four foundational cornerstones and say, where do I even start? That's really what we're focused in on is, you know, where do I start? What do I do first? What can I do that's going to help make a shift and make a change in the situation? So this week is about activating the brain. We also call it brain health. And brain health is important for those of us who have ADHD and those of us who don't have ADHD. It's the cool thing about this is that it can help you. It can help your kids. But there are really three key reasons that we focus on brain health and activating the brain. We do it because we want to optimize brain function so that we can, you know, have full access to the problem-solving part of our brain, that we are well-rested and well-fed so that we can, you know, if we're working on homework or if we're working with our kids on their homework, we can, you know, have full access to that capacity. Brain health also helps to regulate moods. If you're really tired or if you're really hungry or if you're really grumpy, I mean, it tends to all tie in together. And so keeping a healthy brain, keeping physically fit, keeping active can make a difference in terms of being able to stay calm, being able to manage your own emotions, being able to help your kid manage their emotions if they have challenges controlling their impulsivity, challenges controlling their emotionality. Activating the brain can be a great tool. And then the third area is really to counteract what's going on neurobiologically with our kids and their ADHD. ADHD as a neurobiological condition is supported by increased brain activity. I mean, the research has shown that if you can increase dopamine in the brain of somebody with ADHD, help them to increase their ability to focus, increase their ability to pay attention. I mean, so there's some really good research that it shows that brain activation can make a huge difference. So those are the three reasons that you focus on activating the brain. And there's lots of different ways to activate the brain. It's clearly ADHD medication, for those of you who have kids on ADHD medication, is one way to activate the ADHD brain. It doesn't always manage everything. It doesn't, and those of you who know this from experience, it doesn't work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, unless you happen to have a magical pill, which I don't think any of us do. But there are other ways to activate the brain, whether it's through exercise, whether it's through healthy eating, whether it's through some things. Some people do things like brain training. Some people take herbal supplements. I mean, there's a lot of different ways, and there's been a lot of discussion and research, and there's a note here in the blog that we wrote this week. But, you know, it's really about focusing on the brain as a way to support the situation and to move it forward. And, you know, with all of this, I think we said this in the article, it's about a marathon approach. And it's about knowing that sometimes something will work and sometimes another thing won't work. And, you know, so what I want to get a little concrete about this, because the time that kind of for me stands out more than any is the after school time. Because a lot of times both us as parents and our kids end up a little bit weary by the end of the day. If your kid happens to be on medication, a lot of times the medication might be wearing off by the end of the day. Our kids often will come home hungry from school. They'll come home, they've been sitting still and trying, if they're a hyperactive type kid, they've been trying to hold it together and sit still all day. And brain health can be so critical in that time period from, you know, the bus stop to the homework.
And so I don't know, you know, I've got some clients who have a rule that you go and you exercise outside for 30 minutes before you even pick up a book, or you make sure that you get a high-protein snack when you get in the door. Or you might need a kid, have a kid who needs to take a nap, actually, when they get home from school before they try to hit the books. You might need to take a nap when you get home before you try to parent, because you're so exhausted that it's difficult to kind of stay calm and stay in the situation because you're worn out. So it's really all these different actions and activities that you can do, but the focus is on the brain and optimizing brain function and supporting the brain. So as I say that, what comes up for folks?
Hi, this is Beth. Kind of one of my issues is that even though my kids don't do that much, I think, compared to some other kids as far as after-school activities, that the schedule is different every day. You know, we try to set something up, but then it doesn't really work for those days or something changes, and I've had trouble kind of getting into a routine.
So what is it that you see that you need most? I mean, what is it that you're trying to schedule into this, and what are you trying to fit into this schedule? I guess is the short answer.
Well, it's just, you know, when is the homework going to be done? I mean, certainly my preference would be to have a short break right after school and then do homework. But, you know, if there's a 3:30 or a 4 o'clock activity or, you know, appointment, then that's pretty tough. And then I find my, you know, if I'm not super structured, if it doesn't go the way I have it planned, then it's like the whole thing goes out the window. And I have trouble sort of getting back on track. Maybe I need to have, like, a backup plan already in place. But so far, I think I just wing it, and then it's like, oh, well, yeah, of course this isn't going well because, you know, she hasn't had a break or a snack or, you know. But, yeah, it's just hard to juggle everything.
Yeah, so kind of two things come to mind. One is it about you and the consistency, or is it about figuring out how to really get her different, how to get her the same thing in different ways?
It's both. I definitely, you know, I don't have ADHD necessarily, but I am in menopause, and so I feel like I have ADHD. So it is really hard for me to, you know, if it's not written down, and even if it is written down, if I don't look at it, then things just don't happen.
Right, right. So what could you do that's going to help you to be more structured and to remember what's most important?
Well, I did get a whiteboard and put it in an area that, you know, is easy to see. So maybe if I, you know, have my alternate schedules, you know, up there for my, you know, this is what happens on this day. You know, maybe I could use that to be more of a visual reminder.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that kind of comes up for me is that it's about flexible structure. So if your goal is we need some sort of brain health, and you just kind of use that language as the transition from, you know, whatever, from school to, you know, to homework, then, you know, maybe if your kid is in soccer, that meets the same need as, you know, sending them out to play for a half an hour. Or maybe you always keep healthy snacks in the car so that they could eat them on the way home, so you're not having to deal with snack time on the way home once you get home and you've got even, you know, one more thing on the list. I mean, so it's about figuring out not the specifics, but starting with the general of what you're trying to accomplish. Does that resonate?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. What about anybody else? What's coming up for you as we're talking about brain health and activating the brain?
I have a question.
Okay, who's that?
Hello? Oh, Karen?
Karen, you have a question?
I have a question about yelling and activating the brain. So my daughter tends to be kind of in a daze a lot and doesn't do the things that she's supposed to do, like pay her fees for school. And then my husband will find out, and he yells at her, and he says, well, unless I yell at her, then she's not going to do it. And once I yell at her, then she does things. But then from all the reading, it seems like yelling shuts down the brain. So I'm wondering what your thought is. Is yelling good or not good?
Well, so here's the thing I would say. There's two types of energy. There's the energy that you need when you're about to be in a car accident and you, like, it's that urgent sort of emergency energy, right? The word I use is catabolic energy. It's like a cannibal. It's like takes over and it's just really intense and makes stuff happen. And that's the kind of energy that you get when somebody yells at you because you're like, oh my gosh, I'm in a panic. I got to stop this yelling. I've got to do something. And it's the same thing when you're about to be in a car accident and you slam on the brakes. That energy is very powerful and very effective. The challenge is that it's stress producing. And you can't, most people can't survive using that energy 100% of the time. So finding other ways to motivate action, while they are sometimes slower and more subtle, are more sustainable. And so it's the balance between the two. Yeah, you're right. If you're, you know, your husband's yelling at your kid, chances are they'll take action. But over time, what I would say, most kids either shut down to that and stop listening, or they just get exhausted and completely stressed out.
Right. Well, my way of dealing with it would be to help her do it. But then, is that counterproductive, because then she's not learning to do it on her own. She's not learning to, you know, create the will herself to get things done.
Well, and I think that's the piece, that's our balancing act that we talked about last time, which is the expectations and continuing to support her where she's at and to find ways to raise the bar a little bit. You know, so she's not going to be a level 10 on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of independence, but if she's at a 4, continuing to set her up so that 5 becomes more familiar. And once she's at 5, setting her up so that 6 becomes more familiar. And so you're taking her step by step, and it's hard to do when her peers are acting like a 10. But that's
right.
Really the piece of it is finding that balance and finding that way in whatever you're doing to help her, to have her to take some role and some responsibility.
Right. That's helpful.
Who else?
In terms of the, this is Kat. Oh, go ahead.
No, that's right.
I was going to say, in terms of the brain stuff and after school, Zachary's on a long-acting Focalin, but he can take a short-acting in the afternoon. But whether we do that or not, I might have said this before, frequently they'll say they're not hungry for snack after school. And then they're melting down by 5:30, starving, and you haven't got dinner. And one thing I have found, and I'm telling myself this again to remember, is get home, put out cheese and crackers or some kind of protein, and they're tired of me suggesting yogurt, but they love cutting up cheese, pepper jack, Colby Jack, something, and put it out there, and if it's there, they'll eat it. If you ask them, they'll say no. If you put it out, they'll eat it. And I've got to remember, that helps tremendously. So I was going to say, Zachary is a big carb cruncher, pretzels, crackers, all this stuff, which really, and I love that stuff too, but I really think at 4 in the afternoon, protein is what's going to help them. So I just say, put it out there. Make it available.
That's a great suggestion. Thank you for that. That's a brilliant suggestion.
And it's, you know, you're not forcing them, but you're not asking them. You're saying, here it is. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is Beth. Sorry.
Go ahead, Beth. No, go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say, first of all, that's a great idea because I get the same thing. No, I don't want that. I don't want this. But if it's out there, they will eat it because they usually are hungry. And if the protein's there, they'll eat it. So that's a great suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
I had a question about if there are any studies or any – you know, kind of common understanding that is it best for kids with ADHD to do their homework pretty soon after school, you know, within maybe a half an hour of getting home? Is that ideal?
I mean, I don't know that there's any research. What I would say, my experience has been is that particularly, you know, if parents whose kids are on ADHD medications, you know, getting the homework done pretty quickly keeps you in that window before the medication wears off. And if I've heard anything, it's been related to that. And then the other aspect is when the brain gets tired, the brain gets tired. And so the later you get in the day, you know, their natural rhythms of sleep will start to kick in. And a lot of our kids are, you know, have a hard time sleeping. I know I've got a lot of parents who's, they've got their kids on melatonin so that they can get to bed at night. I mean, there's just all these moving pieces between making sure they're getting enough sleep and making sure that they're well rested as they try to do engaged work. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh. Great, thanks.
What else around brain health?
I was just going to say that I find it helpful in some ways to talk about everybody in the family's brain health because it's my memory as I age is like almost legendary in my family right now. And we talk about, you know, the things that I need to do because my memory is like not as good as it used to be. And I think it helps maybe to normalize when we're talking about brain health. My husband's brain health, he's an engineer. And when he's focused on a project, forget it. You're not going to get in, you know, it's like because he's so focused. So I think just talking about how we all need to pay attention to how our brains are functioning optimally and not might be just a good way to maybe not so much normalize it, but not to suggest that a child with ADHD is unique because they need to optimize their brain function, maybe.
So let's take a minute and figure out what we want to do with this information. So there's four questions that we answer towards the end of each call. Let's take a minute and start to answer them, and then I'll do a little coaching around helping somebody figure out how to put something in place. How's that sound?
Good.
So the four questions are, what did I learn or get clear about today? How can I apply this to my life right now? And I'm on page, what page of my workbook am I on? Page 11 of the workbook. All right.
Mm-hmm.
What is a realistic action step for me to take? And how can I set myself up for success? So take a minute and jot down some notes in terms of what you want your focus to be for the next couple weeks before we get together again. And while we're doing that, I'm going to ask if anybody wants to volunteer to get a little coaching around a particular situation that they're trying to put in place at home. Either everybody's doing great or you're all being very nice to each other, which I appreciate.
We're just processing.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this while everybody's thinking. I told you I looked at the PowerPoint for the digital distraction talk.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah, I thought just looking at the PowerPoint was just excellent. I forwarded it to my husband, but would it be worth listening? Was it a webinar? Would it be worth listening to the audio too? I was in a hurry, so I just did the looked at the PowerPoint. But
it was a teleclass, and we threw his PowerPoint on there so that people could see for the visual learners. So it's a really good conversation. There was a lot of really good questions. Elaine and I were both on and had because
the whole thing.
Yeah, I think a lot of people really enjoyed it. And we got some good feedback, so I would encourage you, if you have time, to listen to it.
Because I could tell on Facebook, anything any of us said about the kids and the computer and the TV, everybody was like, oh, that's so where we're at. So that's a pretty big topic.
Thank you for reminding us of that, Catherine.
Mm-hmm.
Is anybody stuck on an action step? I mean, you could think about what you learned and how to apply. I'm really stuck on how to put it into an action step.
So what do you think your biggest challenge is around activating the brain at home?
You know, right now for me, how this applies is how to use that aspect of the necessity of doing that as we talk about ADHD. Because I see that, you know, when my child, when my daughter says, I don't want to take my medication today. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? You know, what do you mean you don't want to take it? We just take it every day. But I see that inching its way in. So I think, you know, talking the talk of the need for brain activation is probably part of this.
Well, and so for you, maybe it's about educating your daughter about why brain health is important. And you mentioned earlier that it's important for you as your brain ages. It's important for your husband because he tends to get hyper-focused. It's important for her as she's trying to, you know, get through her day and support herself with her own ADHD. So maybe an action step would be something around educating the family. And you said earlier that you're doing some kind of weekly or regular conversations about ADHD and education around that.
Yes. We just ordered those videos you had recommended many moons ago.
Let me just tell everybody there's what she's talking about, Totally ADD. And actually, Elaine and I are doing a webinar for them on Thursday night. Totally ADD created two, they were PBS specials on ADHD. And the first one was called ADHD and Loving It, and the other one was called ADHD and Managing It, I think.
Yeah.
But they're really great. Fun videos. If you've got, you know, kids who are, I would say, you know, even fifth grade, fourth grade and up, it's a fun way to learn about ADHD. It's a comedian, and the first video takes him through his diagnostic process and figuring out that he had ADHD and some of the challenges that he has as an ADHD adult. And we watched it as a family. It was really helpful to my kid's dad, who's undiagnosed ADHD, to kind of go, oh, aha, that's really what's going on for me as well.
Yeah.
So what is anybody else going to do in terms of putting something in place for brain activation?
This is Beth. I'm going to definitely try the putting out healthy snacks instead of asking them if they want a snack. That's going to be my next step.
Great.
And this is Beth as well, the other Beth, and I would echo that I'm going to do that. And then the other thing I'm going to try is having homework happen pretty soon after school. Normally, you know, when my 15-year-old comes home, he says, oh, you know, he wants to get on the computer, or he wants a break. And I appreciate that. And I think, but maybe after about a half an hour of a snack and maybe some exercise, if he can get into his homework right then and get it done, and then what I want to do is come up with, you know, a way to reward that. So, you know, whether it is use of the screen time later in the evening when everything is done, as opposed to the other way around where the screen time is happening first. I'm going to try that.
And I know a lot of parents who use that very successfully. So it's the screen time becomes the reward. So if you stay focused on your math for 20 minutes, you can listen to a 5-minute video on YouTube. Or if you're, you know, once you finish your homework, if it's before 9 o'clock, then you can do, you know, 20 minutes of Minecraft, you know, whatever it is. But if you use that as the reward and the motivation, it can sometimes be enough of a trigger to help them to get through and to keep moving forward. That's the other thing, just reminding me when I said that, another place that brain health shows up is taking frequent breaks. And so a lot of times this comes up for our kids because, you know, it takes them 3 hours to do 15 minutes worth of homework. Well, if we forget that, and we're just sitting there kind of helping them to muddle through 3 hours, and believe me, I've done that more than once, you know, we forget that even taking a 10-minute brain break and going and walking around the house or playing a crazy fun tickle game or, you know, doing jumping jacks in the kitchen or trampoline or whatever it is can give your child enough of a break from the task at hand to give them a little bit of energy to get through and finish it.
Yeah.
What about anybody else?
This is Catherine, since people are thinking. One thing I think I want to do is do more talking about it. I forget who was it that said they had the good talk with their daughter about the
Kathy.
ADHD. Kathy. You know, we've talked about it for years, but we don't talk about it a lot. It's kind of like if somebody has diabetes, you don't need to talk to them about it 12 times a day. It's just there and you work on it. But the point is you do occasionally need to talk about it, and I haven't even told my husband this, but lately I've been thinking, trying to deal with all this, are we acting like it's the elephant in the room with him, with Zachary? We need to use the times when his little sister has gone off somewhere, when it's just the three of us, to have some private talks just with him and bring the elephant out and talk about it. And again, when you were talking about early in the call, the ADHD affecting every aspect of their life, you know, and of course, so many times we're thinking, well, they've got this other diagnosis or it's their personality. But really, if it's affecting everything, let's talk about it. This is potentially lifelong. Let's talk about it. Mm. And I think I just want a goal to be able to be more open with him. And I do want to say something real quick. I was sharing with my husband the concept of the disability perspective, looking at it, you know, and how you wouldn't ask a kid in a wheelchair run up the stairs. And I think it's a useful analogy. Now, he didn't like the idea of putting disability on it. And I said, no, that's not putting them in the victim mindset, but it's helping, let's see it as something we need to give them tools to work around or whatever. Anyways, I think I just want to be able to have some more open talks. And like what Kathy said, and I'm going to go back and read her posts. Let's talk about it. Let's, you know, deal with it.
Well, how do you think you could make that? Oh, go ahead, Kathy.
I was just going to say it was really poignant when we were having this talk last night, and my daughter said, you know, sometimes I wish I had more friends. And we find it as you're 13 years old, and friends is really hard for everybody who's 13 years old. It's so complicated when you're 13 years old. And then the ADHD makes it a little bit more complicated. So I think when we talked about it as these are not challenges unique to you. This is life, you know, but your ADHD makes it just a little bit harder to navigate. I think that's where I'm liking, where I'm thinking of going, that it isn't because you are so bizarre because you have ADHD. It's like everything in life can be complicated, and this just complicates it a little bit more.
So, Catherine, where do you think you'll go in terms of making something like that happen?
Well, I feel kind of motivated because of this November 4th 504 meeting coming up, and maybe I should put this on Facebook. They said Zachary could come. It's an eligibility meeting that they have, and the teachers will be there and the 504 coordinator. I don't know about him being there or not, but we're going to need to talk about this. I just want to be more open with him. He's bright. He's complicated, but he's bright. And I want to engage him. I don't know, you know, how to say, you know, kids hate it when you say, okay, let's sit down, let's have a talk. Or, you know, they're like, oh no. And they do the eye roll thing, right? What is it now? I don't know. I just think we've got to be more intentional. I'm saying we, my family, or any of us, all of us, more intentional to be willing to communicate about it, you know?
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that's in the moment, you know, so it's not let's sit down and talk about it. It's, wow, you're really having a hard time focusing right now. I wonder which, you know, aspect of executive function is, you know, going on right now. You know, and you, it takes a while to get to that point because they need to learn the vocabulary and need to understand where it comes into play. But using those real life situations and being a mirror for your child and helping them to really see, because a lot of times they don't notice. They don't realize that, yeah, this isn't just being a 13-year-old and having a hard time making friends. This is being a 13-year-old plus having a challenge with social skills because of your ADHD. Mm-hmm. So can I give you my 2 cents on the 504 meeting and who comes?
Sure. I'll take a dime.
Yeah. So, I mean, what I would say is particularly if it's your first 504 meeting, and I don't even know how, I can't even remember, Catherine, how old your child is, but
15.
Yeah. So the first meeting, my vote would be no, because it's difficult enough to manage yourself through the process because there's so many things going around and so many questions you have. And a lot of people will say bring an uninvolved adult, even if it's a girlfriend or another family friend that you could bring along to help you take notes and to kind of stay more neutral, because you want to understand, but you also are going to, there's some emotions in this. It's difficult not to be emotional for most of us. If you're then trying to manage and pay attention to how your child is reacting in the situation, most parents find that that would get in the way.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I love the friend idea in case my husband can't come. That's good.
Now, at some point in the process, it may be appropriate to bring him in and have him sit down and understand. I frequently have meetings with my son and his teachers, but it's more on a one-on-one basis where we're focused on a particular challenge and educating everybody on what's going on with the ADHD and what we can do in terms of putting a process in place. So we're about at time. Anybody else have a shout-out or a celebration or anything they want to share before we close off?
This is Beth Hopwood, because I guess there's two of us, and I just wanted to throw in my 2 cents that as far as having kids attend 504 meetings or IEP meetings, obviously it depends on the kid, but I also think that once they're in middle school and definitely when they're in high school, if what you're talking about are modifications or accommodations, that it really helps to have the child there, because then you can get some buy-in from them, because mm-hmm. then they feel like they're part of the process as opposed to something being forced upon them afterwards. Mm-hmm. So,
Great. Thank you for sharing that. Great. All right. So does everybody feel sufficiently motivated to move forward, and is anybody stuck? Okay. I'm going to have to take silence as everybody's okay. So if you are stuck, if you need help, drop me an email and let me know. Be sure if you want to have some accountability from the group that you post on Facebook what you're committing to for the next couple weeks and let us know how you're doing. Keep up the good conversation out on Facebook and please let us know how we can help you. We're meeting again in 2 weeks, which is, I don't even know what date that is, maybe October 22nd. Does that look right? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Great call. Thanks for all your participation.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you in a few weeks.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.